This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This morning's Israel report brought to you by Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch. He's from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, former director of the military prosecutions for Judea and Samaria. Very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Can we start with the statement that I saw that peace between Israel and Lebanon is possible this year? What is the latest, and how realistic is that statement?
So, good morning, Howard. I believe that peace with Lebanon is somewhat maybe the second cousin of Casper the Ghost.
Oh gosh.
Harvey the Rabbit. Lebanon as a country doesn't want peace with Israel. The leadership has not wanted the country for peace with Israel. We just saw Joseph Yun the opportunity to go to the White House to meet Prime Minister and saying, I won't meet him. Nawaf Salam, the Prime Minister, is simply a Jew hater. And so they're talking the right talk to maybe encourage the U.S. not to stop the support to the Lebanese armed forces, which they just stopped anyway. But really, I don't think they have any real bona fides intentions of coming to peace. They have no desire to confront Hezbollah.
Do they not have the desire to confront Hezbollah, or do they not have the ability or strength to do so?
I believe that they do not have the desire, Howard. I believe that they have sufficient forces that are part of the Lebanese armed forces that could have confronted Hezbollah, that could have ensured that Hezbollah were finished off last year or a year and a half ago after the ceasefire, but they positively chose not to do anything and rather to play this double talk of pretending to want to get rid of Hezbollah and retake the country, but really not doing anything and not doing anything definitely proactive.
So the in terms of the link to the Iranian war, should that front be more successful, and Iran is less able or disabled, or maybe agrees, but I can't imagine that, or even if they did agree, I can't imagine them actually sticking to it. But if they were to stop the funding for whatever reason of Hezbollah, it does that change the outcome?
So obviously, Iran is a major funder of Hezbollah. Iran pulls the strings of Hezbollah. But Hezbollah in and of itself is a very now extensive terrorist organization involved heavily in narco terrorism as well. They have their own income somewhere in the region of $7 to $12 billion a year. They are not a small force and well established, and so obviously the fall of the Iranian regime would substantially damage their standing and undermine their standing, but I believe that they would still continue to inflict their terrorism also on Lebanon.
So obviously this is, and when Trump talks about, you know, there can be a meeting and they're all going to get together at the White House, is this complete fiction in your view?
So it's possible that President Trump will manage to strong arm Joseph Fayoun and the Lebanese government side, as it were, to come to discussions. But if the argument that everyone is trying to make is so true that the government really isn't capable of doing anything, well, then what's the point of making peace with them? What peace can they actually deliver? which is why I believe that they could do more and they just don't want to, in which case they also won't agree to a peace agreement.
Let's just move across to Iran, because it is integral and very much part of this discussion. The Iranian Crown Prince has rejected talks with Iran, says negotiations are appeasement, and urges renewed protest to topple the regime. How significant are these statements?
So I think that we're at the stage getting very much closer to the stage where the Iranian people will have to continue the battle against the regime on the ground. I think that aerial bombardments, as strong as they are and as intensive as they are, won't really be effective enough to bring about that regime change. And that's for the Iranian people to say, you know what, the regime has now been sufficiently weakened and we can rise up again. The question is whether that is an accurate assessment on the ground. I think we saw just before the end of the ceasefire an expanding of the targeting in Iran, also to include the besieged forces, the forces of the IRGC in the local in the big towns and localities, and that's something which needs to be intensified should the war continue on. That will then provide more of a cover for the Iranian people to rise up rather than any of the claims that a regime change can be achieved from an aerial bombardment alone.
So what is the, I mean, Trump has announced this extension again of the ceasefire. What potentially lies behind that?
So I think that President Trump is preparing to again hold by his word. He's given the Iranians a number of extensions. He's given them a number of ultimatums. Every time an ultimatum was met, there was decisive action. After that, we've seen the ceasefire extended unilaterally by President Trump for 3 to 5 days. But at the same time, there's been the arrival in the area of the George Bush, I think, one of the U.S. Aircraft carriers, and another massive aerial buildup that we're seeing over the last few days with the movement of both troops and aerial assets closer into the region. So I think President Trump is gearing up to say, you know what, you're not taking these discussions very seriously, and therefore it's time to move back to a full-on kinetic war. That's something I think which is probably going to happen sooner rather than later.
Do these extensions of the ceasefire, because of what is happening on the Strait of Hormuz, does this starve or effectively create a siege for Iran? In other words, the longer it goes on, the weaker Iran becomes.
Yeah, without question, Howard. I think that's part of the plan as well, too. The continuation of the war, even during the ceasefire, just using economic means, has been an integral part of that plan. You're already seeing the IRGC, to a certain extent, incapable of paying salaries. You're seeing the Iranian economy completely imploding. You're seeing the inability to even sell any part of their oil through the ghost fleets, which they were always doing along the way. The bombing by the IRGC of the Indian oil ship was also a substantial event, in that India had continued to buy Iranian oil all the way through, ignoring the sanctions. And so now even they are cutting their ties to a certain extent with Iran. So we're seeing the buildup of that pressure. Obviously, it's a very short period of time. This only started on the 28th of February. So, and this type of financial influence and effect does take time to build up.
Mm. So the longer this goes on, effectively, the the weaker Iran's position. Is that likely to bring them back to the negotiating table, or likely to push them towards more drastic action, which would escalate the military conflict again?
Well, so there, I think you have the two different camps within Iran, one of the two or three different camps that you have leading the country, the IRGC camp, Wahidi, who says, you know what, it doesn't matter what, we are going to just carry on doing what we're doing and rejecting any type of discussions, any type of talks. And ostensibly, the more progressive camp of Pezeshkian and possibly Rally Baf, the Speaker of the Parliament, who albeit grew up in the IRGC, who are trying to present, I think, a different approach from the IRGC. And within those two camps, it's not clear who exactly runs the roost, which is part of the problem with the discussions even in Islamabad. Who has the last say in Iran at the moment?
Because I see Trump has alluded to this fairly frequently lately, that the leadership is fractured. But I wasn't sure if this is, again, just part of taunting Iran, or if this is reality. On the ground, is that what we believe to be the case, that there is this fractured leadership or very little leadership, cohesive leadership in Iran?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the reality on the ground. I think that's what we're definitely seeing between possibly the progressive camp, the IRGC camp, and I mentioned that there's a third camp that's sort of in between, but is waiting for a sign of life from the new Ayatollah, from the new supreme leader, from Mujtaba Khamenei, who was elected as the new leader, but has yet to be seen in showing any type of sign of life in any forum whatsoever. And so you have that third camp that's sort of sitting on the fence between the two others, saying, we haven't decided where we are yet, but we want to see the supreme leader. If there's no supreme leader, then who's talking for that side? Mm. Who's running the IRGC? And so we really are seeing a very fractured leadership within that top echelon of Iran, again, for better or for worse. It means that they are fractured. It means that they are divided. But on the other hand, it also means that there's no one authoritative source with whom you can hold negotiations.
Finally, the Pope, and I mean finally both in subject matter for this conversation, and finally, the Pope has condemned the killing of protesters in Iran. What took him so long? I mean, we're now heading towards May. This was in January. Why did he finally do this, do we think?
I think the Pope, Howard, has very much lost any type of moral compass, any type of moral direction. His inability to recognize the aggressors for what they are, his inability to recognize that the sword of Islam is drinking thirstily of the blood of Christians throughout Africa, his inability to identify that as the problem, and rather his fixation on condemning Israel. I think this was very much a mealy mouth condemnation of the deaths of the murder of the protesters, rather than anything else, to show some type of balance, which has been so completely missing from any of the messaging of the Pope. And I think people are more and more recognizing that and seeing that it's a problem.
That is, and very, very sad, because he holds an incredibly important position, but has certainly not covered that role in glory. That is where we leave it. Thank you, as always, Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security Foreign Affairs, former Director of Military Prosecutions for Judea and Samaria. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.